Ever had one of those neighbors? You know the type. Seems like they just try to get under your skin. Well, today we're going deep on a property law case that, let me tell you, takes bad neighbor to a whole new level.
Oh, yeah.
It's Sundowner Inc. v. King,
Okay, I know that one.
a classic case from 1966
Not
out in Idaho.
bad. Yeah.
And it all starts with a motel sale gone wrong. Seriously sour.
What's so interesting about Sundowner is it really gets into like how far can you go on your own property,
Yeah.
especially when you're doing it out of spite.
Okay, so set the scene for us.
Right.
We've got Robert Bushnell. He sells a motel to this couple, James and Agnes King. Seems normal enough, right? Typical business. But then Bushnell builds his own WN motel right next door.
Oh, okay.
This new one's called the Desert Inn. Maybe a little strategic, don't you think?
Yeah, maybe a little bit.
But hold on, because it gets worse. The Kings, they sue Bushnell over that original sale.
Right.
So there's some bad blood already. And then they build this thing, this huge E structure, right on the property line between the two motels.
I'm picturing it. How big are we talking?
85 feet long, 18 feet high.
Whoa.
Basically a wall. And it blocks out all the sun from the Desert Inn.
That's not very neighborly.
18 feet high. That's taller than most giraffes. What were they thinking?
Well, they said it was, a
Well, I'm not.
sign for
First
their
off, guy.
motel. But I mean, come on. This thing cost them $6,300 to build.
$6,300.
Back then, that's a lot of money. And it's positioned just 16 inches from the property line. I mean, if that's for advertising, it's a bit much.
Yeah, I'm with you. Overkill. So not really a sign then.
Yeah, experts even said a sign that size right there would probably hurt their business more than help.
Okay, so if it wasn't a sign, sounds like what we call a classic spite fence.
Exactly.
But the question is, legally, did they even have the right to build that thing?
Yeah, that's the big question in Sundowner, right? I mean, what does the law actually say about being that kind of bad neighbor?
Right. Can you really just do whatever you want on your property, even if it's just to mess with someone?
Well, the Kings, they argued that they had every right to build whatever they wanted on their land.
Absolute property rights.
That's what they claimed. But Bushnell, he sued back, said the structure, it was built purely to annoy him. No other real purpose, just wanted to hurt his motel business.
So the court had to decide, do property rights really overrule everything? Or are there limits, when it comes to intentionally harming your neighbor? What did they decide?
So the Idaho Supreme Court, they sided with Bushnell.
Really?
Yep, they ruled that this structure, it was a spite fence, and they brought up this fascinating legal principle.
Oh, here we go. Hit us with the Latin.
Sic tutire tuo ut alienum non leat,
Love it when we get some Latin.
which basically means use your own property in a way that doesn't harm others.
So even though it was their land, they couldn't use it to deliberately cause trouble for their neighbor.
Precisely. Sundowner actually established this two-part test for spite fences in Idaho.
Okay, a two-part test. Lay it on us.
First, does this structure, whatever it is, does it actually serve a real purpose for the owner?
Okay. Makes sense.
And second, was it built with the sole intention of, well, being annoying to the neighbor?
So basically, the court was saying, let's look beyond what they're calling it and see what they're really trying to do.
Exactly.
So I'm guessing the court didn't buy the whole sign excuse.
Not at all. They said there's no way the Kings could have reasonably thought that monstrosity would actually attract customers. The cost, the location, even the design, it all pointed to spite as the main motive.
Wait, the design? What do you mean?
Well, the fence, get this, it was basically a copycat of the Desert Inn's northwest side, almost like a deliberate poke in the eye.
Oh, wow. Talk about adding insult to injury.
Right. And remember that $6,300 price tag? The court basically said no reasonable business owner would spend that much on a sign that doesn't work.
So they weren't just looking at the law in a vacuum. They considered the whole situation, the history between these two motel owners, the fact that experts said the sign was useless, and even the design itself.
They took it all into account.
They said basically, property rights have their limits, especially when you're intentionally trying to hurt someone.
And Sundowner actually overturned a previous ruling in Idaho,
Oh, really? Which one?
White v. Bernhardt. That case had suggested that spite fences were okay, actually.
Interesting. So Sundowner was a big shift in Idaho law, showing that the legal system, it can change, adapt to better address those neighborly relations. Okay, so we know the court sided with Bushnell, but what happened next? Did they actually make the Kings tear down this giant sign? And what kind of impact did this whole thing have on property law, not just in Idaho, but beyond that one case?
Great questions. And that's exactly what we'll delve into when we come back for part two of our deep dive into Sundowner, Inc. v. King. Welcome back. Glad to have you with us as we continue our deep dive into Sundowner, Inc. v. King.
Last time, we were talking about those feuding motel owners, that giant so-called sign, and a court battle that went all the way up to the Idaho Supreme Court.
And we saw how the court had to wrestle with this idea, you know, the limits of property rights. They ended up siding with Bushnell, said the King's structure was a spite fence, no other real purpose than to hurt his business.
Yep. The court even brought up that old Latin legal principle, sic iter tuo ut alienum non laetus.
Yes. Use your property so as not to injure others. Love that one.
It's amazing how, even though that idea is super old, it still applies to these modern cases.
It shows you how those core legal principles, they stick around. But Sundowner wasn't just about repeating something old. It actually set up a specific test, a two-part test for figuring out if something is really a spite fence in Idaho. And courts still use it today.
Okay, so how did that Sundowner ruling play out in the end? Did they make the Kings tear down that massive sign?
Oh, they did. Court ordered them to remove the whole thing.
Wow, no kidding.
And get this. The Kings tried to appeal, take it to a higher court.
Yeah, what happened?
The Idaho Supreme Court said no, upheld the original ruling, basically made it clear, spite fences, not gonna fly.
Talk about a win for Bushnell.
Yeah.
But it wasn't just about one guy getting revenge, right? What kind of impact did Sundowner have on property law in general?
Well, Sundowner became a landmark case. It actually influenced property law way beyond Idaho.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Lots of states have adopted similar laws about spite fences, and a lot of times they directly cite Sundowner as the precedent, like a ripple effect, you know? One case creates these waves of change across the legal world.
It's amazing to think one case about a motel feud can do all that. So are there any other specific cases that we can point to that were influenced by Sundowner?
Absolutely. There's one from 1994 in Wyoming, Ingle v. Goshen County. That one was about a landowner who built a fence that blocked his neighbor from getting to a public road.
Okay, so a little different from a sign.
Right. But the court in that case, they specifically referenced the Sundowner two-part test. They wanted to figure out, was that fence actually a spite fence or not?
So even though Sundowner was about that sign, its core principles, they apply to all sorts of property disputes.
Exactly. It set this precedent. Now, courts have to look deeper, consider the intent behind a structure, even if it seems like it has a legitimate purpose on the surface.
Makes you think twice about that saying, good fences make good neighbors, huh?
Right.
But speaking of changing times, how do those spite fence laws, how do they work in today's world? Things are a lot different now than they were back in 1966.
That's a great question.
Like, are we seeing any digital versions of spite fences popping up?
That's something courts are dealing with right now. I mean, Sundowner was about a physical structure, right?
Right, a big old fence.
But those principles, they could apply to all kinds of modern disputes. Think about things like drone surveillance.
Ooh, yeah, good point.
Or even someone building a huge privacy wall just to block their neighbor's view.
Like taking it to the extreme.
Exactly.
So even though that case is from the 1960s, it might actually shape how we handle all these new tech challenges.
It could lay the groundwork.
It's like Sundowner anticipated these new forms of spite that might pop up.
The main principle is still the same. You can't use your property, whether it's physical or digital, just to cause harm to your neighbor.
Now, I'm curious about that harm part. How do courts actually measure harm in cases like this? Does it have to be, like in Sundowner, financial harm, hitting someone's business in the wallet? Or can it be more about, like, emotional distress? Say someone's constantly flying a drone over your property.
That's where it gets tricky, and it really depends on the specific laws of each state.
Got it. So different everywhere.
But in some cases, courts have said, yeah, spiteful actions can cause emotional distress.
Makes sense.
They can even lower your property value, even if you don't lose money directly.
Mm-hmm. So it's not always a simple dollar amount. The law can protect against those less tangible harms, too.
Which makes sense, right? I mean, how we feel at home, our sense of privacy, that's all important.
Absolutely. And that's why cases like Sundowner's are so important. They show us that the law can adapt, protect individual rights, and try to create a sense of fairness and community. Especially in a world that's always changing.
All right, so we've talked about the history, the legal specifics of Sundowner. We've even touched on how it's relevant today.
Yeah, we've covered a lot of ground.
But before we wrap up this whole deep dive, I want to bring it back to our listeners for a second. What are the big takeaways here? What can they actually apply to their own lives, even if they're not running a motel?
Great point. I think the most important thing to remember is this. Property rights, they're not absolute. You can't just do anything you want on your property, especially if it's meant to mess with someone else.
Right, even if you think you've got a good reason. Exactly. If there's evidence of bad intentions, the court might not see it your way.
So knowing your intentions, thinking about how your actions affect others, that's crucial.
Absolutely.
And if you ever find yourself in a property dispute, it's worth asking yourself, does this Sundowner two-part test apply to my situation?
It's a good question to ask. Knowing the law can help you protect your own rights, and it helps you understand where the boundaries are, what's acceptable when it comes to using your property.
This has been a really interesting deep dive into Sundowner v. King. We've covered a lot, from the details of the case itself to its broader impact on property law and even its relevance in our digital age.
We've seen how what seems like a small case, a squabble over a motel sign, can actually lead to big changes in the legal world. And it really makes us think about that balance between individual rights and the good of the community.
And on that note, I think it's time to wrap up our deep dive into Sundowner Inc. v. King. Hopefully you've all learned something about spite fence laws and how the principles from this case are still with us today.
Thanks for joining us for this fascinating look at property law and those sometimes tricky neighborly relations. Until next time, keep in mind, good fences don't always make good neighbors, especially when there's spite involved.
Welcome back to our final deep dive into this whole world of spite fences and the big case, Sundowner Inc. v. King.
It's been quite a journey, hasn't it?
It has.
From that motel feud in 1960s Idaho to, well, property disputes today.
Yeah, who knew a case about a motel sign could be so fascinating?
Right. But it really shows those underlying issues. You know, where do individual rights end and how important is it to get along with your neighbors?
It really does.
And we saw how the Idaho Supreme Court, they had to figure all that out. Ultimately, they sided with Robert Bushnell.
Right. They said that massive structure the Kings built, that was a spite fence. Pure and simple, meant to hurt his business.
And remember that Sundowner decision with that two-part test for figuring out a spite fence.
Yep, still in use today.
It had this ripple effect, influenced property law in other states, and even how we think about modern stuff, you know, like drones and those massive privacy walls.
Like Sundowner was ahead of its time.
In a way, it was.
So as we wrap this whole thing up, let's get to the heart of it. What's the real wisdom here? What can our listeners actually take away from Sundowner? Something they can use in their own lives, even if they're not motel owners.
Good question. I think the biggest thing is, remember, property rights, they're not unlimited.
Right. You can't just do whatever you want. Consequences and all that.
Especially if what you're doing, it harms your neighbors.
It's like that old saying, your right to swing your fist ends where my nose begins.
Exactly. It's a reminder that we live in a society, you know? We got to be mindful of how our actions affect other people.
And even if you think you've got a good reason for what you're doing, the court might see it differently, especially if it seems like you're acting out of spite.
And that brings us to that second key point. Intent matters. It's not enough for something to just be annoying or inconvenient. It's got to be proven that the main goal was to actually harm or harass the neighbor.
Like in Sundowner, they looked at everything. How much that sign cost, where it was, how it was designed to mirror the Desert Inn. It all pointed to spite.
It did, which is why documentation is so important.
Oh, right. Good point.
If you're ever dealing with a potential spite fence situation, keep track of everything. Write down any conversations you have with your neighbor, take pictures or videos of the structure, and definitely talk to a lawyer to understand your rights.
Yeah, that paper trail can make all the difference.
Absolutely. It can really help you prove intent if you end up in court. But, you know, before things even get that far, I always say it's worth trying to work things out peacefully. Talk to your neighbor, try to see things from their side, maybe find a compromise that works for both of you.
Communication is key.
It really is. Going to court can be expensive, time-consuming, and really stressful. There are other ways to resolve these disputes.
Like mediation.
Exactly. Having someone neutral there to help facilitate the conversation, find some common ground.
Well, this has been a really deep dive into Sundowner v. King. We've learned about spite fence laws, how one case can impact the legal world, and even how it all applies today.
We've seen how a case about a motel sign can spark these big changes in how we think about individual rights and being part of a community.
Great stuff.
It has been.
And on that note, I think it's time to wrap up our deep dive into Sundowner Inc. v. King. Hopefully this has given everyone a better understanding of these kinds of laws and how the principles from this case, they're still relevant in our modern world.
Thanks for joining us for this exploration of property law and navigating those sometimes tricky relationships with our neighbors.
And remember, good fences don't always make good neighbors, especially when Spike gets involved. We'll see you next time for another deep dive into the world of legal cases that shape our lives.